thought you were speaking, nobody would have listened.
Like the tree.
Okay.
Oh, here we go.
All right, so is it working?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, we'll call the House Judiciary Committee to order. It's the 18th of June, and President Representative Parnell, Martin, Ellis, Miller, Grunberg, and Donnelly. And the matter on the agenda today is House Bill, I think this is 601, even if it doesn't have a number on it.
Yeah. That's what I was told.
Yeah.
It's 601. It's a resources, yes, entry for the bill.
Okay, so it's the Resources Committee is the House Bill 601. And had a special request from the administration. I think they have some folks they'd like to testify, have to explain. So we'll go ahead and take that testimony now.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'll just lead off real briefly, and as I indicated to Representative Woodford before you arrived, by necessity, our testimony will be somewhat limited. I have had a chance to read through the bill, but not even thoroughly read it. And one of the things that I would suggest, in leading through it, and then I have had the benefit of some explanation from staff, I am still not sure I totally understand it. And this is an area that I'm more conversant in than most. So. But what I would say is, looking through this, we feel that one, anything in this area deserves, we believe, I think a little more time than we're going to be able to, or have given this, or we're going to be able to give it. I would hope that you would explore it pretty thoroughly. Two, from what I have seen about it, while there may be at least one useful aspect of it in terms of being able to close specific areas to subsistence use, we feel that there are, unfortunately, rampant other problems that we have with our existing state law that this does not fix, and it certainly needs it. It is also a concern that by adding a whole new category to categories that the Board of Fish can already allocate among, which is, as I understand it, customary use, fishing and hunting. I am not sure, I've been unable to totally figure out what additional options that gives the boards to allocate that they don't already allocate under providing personal use fishing. I suppose it does allow them to set up, if they do use that and use the what looks to be the tier two criteria, to set up a system whereby you allocate among subsistence users, then it would seem to me you are allowing those persons a particular right that you're not allowing other people, which is not the case in any of the fisheries. Actually, it would be the only fishery or hunt in the whole state right now, if this is the only thing you do, that is restricted specifically to users. I think Mr. Nelson will comment on that raises some constitutional concerns about the bill as well. And that's just a real brief overview, and I'm sorry, there may be, I just simply have failed to grasp it in the time I've been able to read through it a couple times. But what I would say is, I know when the Subsistence Advisory Council put its bill together, it was a case where every word and line and paragraph took hours and hours and hours of discussion and debate and you know, talking with folks throughout the state and get public hearings throughout the state. And that's how we arrived at what we did. And I have to say that I would be very leery of an attempt to fix this situation even partially with something that has been written literally in between two committee meetings on the same day or very quickly. So with that, I turn over to Ms. Nelson for perhaps some better analysis.
And Mr. Nelson, if you just wait a second.
Sure.
Please proceed.
Okay. I too have had cursory review of this, and you should take to my comments with that proviso, and
maybe a large grain of salt. I do have some basic concerns, though, and primarily they're with section G on page 5. In creating a new category of use, customary use of customary of fish and game, the bill sets up a system authorizing the board, not requiring the board, but authorizing them to, as I understand it anyway, let's see, or maybe it does require them, I'm not sure. Lori, can you straighten me out on that? Would the board be required to institute this program in all non-sufficient use areas, or review non-sufficient use areas, see whether or not this applied? Or
well, Mr. Chairman, if you'd like me to do an overview of the bill for the people understand I'd be glad to.
I think it raises constitutional questions. And that might sound kind of funny at first because these look awful a lot like the Tier 2 criteria. The difference is this. In the Tier 2 criteria, you're in a situation where you've narrowed down, you've got such a shortage of animals that even those who are all equal as far as their relationship to that animal goes and need for it, even those few can't be satisfied. And so you need another criteria to decide besides dependence and reliance and all that that would be normally look at for determining qualification for subsistence use. And in Tier 2, we go to local proximity to the resource or local residency, but used in different ways. In that situation, it's one of the few criteria left after all the other things being equal. In this case, you're not to that point. There isn't any shortage of a resource. You're designating the shortage out of there, and you're using proximity to the resource, which is awfully close to the rural preference, without the demanding, the high need for it that you do in a Tier 2 situation. I think Tier 2, the reason this is permissible under Tier 2 is because you're down to the brass tacks, and you're back down to the find the one or criteria that distinguishes between Mr. A and Mr. B, who, you know, everything else about their use is equal, except, so you decide, how do you decide between them? And the way you do it is you say, well, at that point, maybe proximity to the resource does count for something. Here you're using proximity to the resource before you get to that point to be a criteria. So I think that does present a problem. It may, you know, I could be wrong, but I think that's the distinction between a Tier 2 and rural preference, Tier 2 proximity to the resource and rural preference being a constitutional problem. But courts have found upheld Tier 2, but not and rural urban criteria cut there. The other problem is, of course, it's going to cause a lot of logistical problems. You're creating a new category of use to determine qualifications, different from Tier 2, even though some of it's similar. And so you're going to have different it's going to be a mammoth task. It will not be something you can implement this year, and it probably isn't the intent of the sponsors that it be implemented this year. The one good thing you could about it, I guess, it does have an immediate effect today, but it will be logistically impossible to qualify, to go through a qualification process for people for this season. I can guarantee you that because of our experience with Tier 2 and the boards working with that. The board would first have to adopt regulations, which in itself would take a minimum of 60 days probably, and then once they were in effect, then you would have application forms, but aside from that, I mean, I think that's probably understood by the right authors that it may be impossible to implement this year, but it may be good next year. One good thing about it is that it would have the effect of probably allowing the boards to declare by emergency regulation possibly non-subsistence areas, and may alleviate some of the tension in some of the hotter fisheries, I think. The other concern I have is the definition of customary trade. I obviously like the definition here.
Just for the members, that's on the last page.
On page 7. Obviously, I like the definition that I helped the Assistant Advisory Council draft for a customary trade. I think unless you have some reference in there to keeping sales out of commercial channels, and not just authorizing the board to do that, but requiring the boards to do that, I think you have the potential for problems to still exist, like we have today in Herring Row and Kelvin Southeast, challenges with Salmon Row and the Yukon River and other areas of the state. And so I guess I would, my two bits would be that you ought to adopt the full, it would be a good idea to amend it to adopt the full definition of customary trade and governance bill as opposed to part of it, because I think you need direction to the board as opposed to just discretionary authority.
Sir? Okay, at this point, I'd like to call on staff counsel.
Mr. Chairman, if I could continue with one brief point, or I can continue after Ms. Otto testifies, whichever. At your convenience.
You're free to testify again after.
That's all I'm asking.
Your period's not over yet.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Mr. Nelson, even though this is not the definition that you wrote and the definition that you'd like to see in the best of all possible worlds, wouldn't you agree that it's a significant advance of the current law and gives the board clear authority to, for example, write non-commercial channels and non-commercial activities into their definition?
It is helpful. It's a positive step. I don't think it goes far enough.
But it's better than what we got now, it's the bottom line.
It is, because it gives clear authority, hopefully clear authority to the boards that they could restrict that. But although they've done that already, and we still have problems, but that's it is. I don't want to take away from the positive aspects of it.
If I could just briefly, and I'm sorry I didn't have all this the first time, but I guess I'm still reading the bill as we go through. As you're obviously aware, this bill does not solve the situation which we regard as the major problem in the state, and that every one of us here is a subsistence user. And left uncorrected, that is going to cause, we believe, major allocative shifts over time. We are also concerned that it does not fix the problems of providing definitions for some of the key terms, such as reasonable opportunity, customary, and traditional, and other terms. I would also note that in use of these Tier 2 criteria, we actually talked at some length about the use of the Tier 2 criteria for determining, in our Category 3 level, in terms of who gets to participate and who doesn't. And the council actually spent a good bit of time talking about those. And what I think was decided pretty unanimously by the council is that the Tier 2 criteria simply didn't work. While they worked fairly effectively if you were dealing with a small hunt, somewhere off in rural Alaska, you're dealing with a set number of people who are actual subsistence users, and then trying to differentiate among those people. In areas where we are having to use Tier 2 hunts right now, such as Nelchina Caribou, which was probably the first major hunt to go into a Tier 2 status, and I'll use some examples from that, we have had massive unhappiness from pretty much all the participants, and there has been a general consensus that basically the Tier 2 situation had turned into a straight liars contest in terms of who qualified and who did not. And in fact, it is our inability to effectively deal with hunts near the urban areas through the Tier 2 status that is one of the reasons that we're absolutely convinced we have to eliminate the situation of everybody being potentially eligible. Now, I realize this is not consistent use, but I believe it is parallel in that you would have all residents of the state eligible to apply to see if the criteria fit them. Am I wrong? You're shaking your head?
Oh.
You know,
if I'm wrong. Okay.
if you have a large, anyway, a large urban population, and then you're going to try to differentiate among that urban population who might be eligible through these criteria, then you run into a tremendous problem. I would also point out that the one criteria that has actually proved useful in the church's situation, in fact, is the only one that proved very useful because it's the only one that's really very measurable, is proximity to the resource. But you can at least, you know, that should be at least a straight factual matter, but we have a lot of applicants who seem to indicate Anchorage addresses that are living 0 miles from the resource or 5 miles from the resource on their application. In general, we've actually spent a good bit of time separately talking with enforcement about the ability to prosecute a lot of these folks. They felt generally there has not been one single prosecution, despite the rather severe desire by the governor to pursue prosecution of people who are abusing the system, because we were advised that simply most of the cases would not be winnable. And the one criteria which we've indicated that is useful to us, proximity to the resource, is the one criteria at least I believe I hear Mr. Nelson suggesting you may have constitutional difficulties with. The last thing I would say is I realize we don't have a budget vehicle ahead of us. I believe, though, that all other bills do have fiscal notes attached for informational purposes. This would carry substantial fiscal impact, and I hope, you know, at some point we have that attached as well. And we'd be happy to try to develop that for you as quickly as we could. With that, and if I miss something or misstated something, I apologize. Like I said, we've just seen it very quickly.
Right. Well, that's your testimony. I don't know
questions.
What I'd really like to do is have Ms. Otto.
If she gives us an overview and then questions.
It'd sure be helpful.
Yeah, it'd be helpful to me. Mr. Chairman, we do appreciate it.
Okay.
We do appreciate it, and we're
trying to
inconvenience you in any way.
Oh, it's all right. You have a time problem. It's understandable. Representative
Parnell. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the, are we on teleconference now?
Yeah.
In the overview, could Ms. Otto also give the benefit of this committee on the harvesting primarily for personal or family consumption and the use of customary trade? Give us the benefit of the discussion that the previous committee went through on it.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I guess I'd like to start off first by saying what this bill isn't, because, and I say that because in listening to Mr. Campbell's testimony, a lot of what he was testifying about is what's not in the bill. And it's not intended to be a comprehensive solution to the subsistence issue in the state of Alaska. It's not intended to provide a vehicle for defining all the undefined terms, nor is it a vehicle for solving the McDowell problem, nor is it a vehicle for coming into compliance with ANILCA, nor is it a vehicle for doing all the overreaching things, the comprehensive things that the governor's bill attempts to do. That's a political issue that is really irrelevant to the issue that I've been working on. The governor's bill has already passed out of the committee, is in the rules committee, and so we're not dealing with all of the problems and all of the concerns that Mr. Campbell raised. What this bill does is provide a specific solution to two specific problems that have been identified during the course of the past few days by the administration and by others who have testified on the various pieces of assistance legislation. The first problem it solves is the major problem that has been identified with the Kenai fishery, and that is how the All Alaskans policy that the Board Fish and Board of Game have implemented is affecting a resource that has limited stocks when there is a huge urban population nearby ready to take advantage of that resource availability. The second problem it solves is having a definition of customary trade set out in the statute to deal with the Herring Row case and others that we have heard about during the course of the last few days. It does so by, the Salsa Canine problem by requiring the boards of fish and game to define non-subsistence areas, which is basically the urban area definition taken out of the governor's bill verbatim, the criteria taken out of the governor's bill verbatim. It then requires the boards of fish and game to grant customary use permits within subsistence use areas based on criteria set by the board and that are spelled out in the statute. Although the board is required to grant customary use permits to people who meet the criteria, and the board can define those criteria, let's be frank, as narrowly or as broadly as they'd like to. If they want to limit the number of users, they can define it very narrowly. But then the board has the discretion, if it chooses to exercise it, to allocate fish and game resources to holders of customary use permits. There is not a subsistence priority. Holders of customary use permits do not take priority over personal, sport, or commercial users. The value of creating this new category of customary use permits is this. In areas like the Kenai, the board may choose to allocate resources to holders of customary use permits, which I think can reasonably be expected to be, for example, members of the Kenaitse Indian tribe, and not allocate to personal use permits people who are engaging in personal use of fisheries, and still provide for sport and commercial use, so that it allows the board more flexibility in how it makes its allocation decisions. It's very clear, and the interest groups who are maybe on the other end of the spectrum of Mr. Campbell understand that this is discretionary with the board. I know that a lot of people, where we started off with AFM, for example, they would probably prefer this to be mandatory, that the board allocate a specified number of specified quantity of the resource to customary use. This bill does not do that, but it gives the board the discretion to do that if it chooses to, so that you don't have everybody in Anchorage all of a sudden being able to go down to the Kenai and engage in subsistence activities there, because it would be a non-subsistence area. That's the primary thrust of the bill. The other aspect of the bill is defining customary trade. In the governor's bill, and Representative Parnell asked about this, there was a reference to harvested primarily for personal or family consumption. That was not included in the bill, because when we sat down to try to talk about what that meant, some people thought it meant that the entire catch was harvested for personal family consumption. Other people felt you had to do it on a fish-by-fish basis. Rather than trying to come up with a definition in the course of the next few days, I mean in the next few hours, we're leaving it to the board's discretion, and they have very broad discretion to come up with a definition that they think is appropriate. They're the resource managers. They're the experts. This body and this committee is not. So we're giving the board the authority to do that kind of definition. That's basically what the bill does. There was a discussion about this is the only restricted fishery. I'd note that it's based on individual criteria, which is the entire premise behind the governor's bill, and was okayed by the Supreme Court in McDowell, that you can restrict entry if you base it on individual criteria. Mr. Nelson indicated a concern about the constitutionality, the proximity to the resource criteria. George Udemal, who is in the Senate now, who we can jerk over if you want, does not believe that that is unconstitutional. I personally have not researched the issue. Mr. Starkey, who's in the audience, has spent a great deal of time litigating in this area and can respond to the constitutional question, and I think he has some further comments. Frankly, if it becomes a major issue, my recommendation would be to delete it. It's not a necessary criteria, because the other criteria give the board enough latitude to be able to define the people who would qualify for this customary use fishery.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions to the council? Representative Martin?
Yeah. Ms. Otto, you mentioned that as Mr. Campbell was concerned about some of the
things that were addressed in the governor's bill were not addressed in this bill. And it seems to me that you were saying that perhaps both bills need to go forward. If the governor's bill is addressing other problems within the fishing industry and you haven't addressed them here, was it the intent of whoever that both bills go forward?
Ms. Otto doesn't speak for the intent of the legislature, neither does this necessarily this committee or any individual, Representative Martin.
Well, I mean, there was a statement saying that it seemed to be deliberate that this did not answer all the questions that the other bill did. So if that is true, is it the intent of someone that both bills go through, or one of the other?
Now, how would anybody know if it's somebody's intent? For what?
I can only guess at what the statement said.
Sure. Well, the proposal before us today is some consensus points that have been attempted to put together by various parties working on
it. I can agree with that. And with the consensus, does it mean that both bills are one or the other? Because she admitted this does not answer all the questions they have.
It's not intended to.
Okay. If it's not intended to, does that mean there's good parts of that other bill that should come forward too?
Well, that's an opinion for every legislator to make on his or her own.
Sure it is, but I'm asking you, what would you, whoever made this thing, what would have done that?
Well, as far as I can figure out, these have been the only points so far that there's been a consensus on. And if you feel differently, I respect your opinion.
Well, I'm very ignorant in fishing. That's why I have to ask ignorant questions. My level of intelligence is limited to what answer I get, even if I get a no answer. So anyway,
well, you're not going to get an answer to a question like that from me because I can't provide it, and you know that.
Well, you're all in charge. You're all passing both bills, and the way it was said, Mr. Campbell did say some of these problems that were addressed in the governor's bill are not in here. And if we're trying to solve problems within the fishing industry, then those who are taking leadership of this tell us what to do.
Well, not every bill solves every problem in the state, Representative Martin. Sometimes there's packages put together to try to solve as much as we can at any particular time. And this is an effort to do that. Representative Grunberg?
If I understand your question right, your question is, how does this bill relate to the other bill?
As part of it, yes. If they complement the other bill, are they complementary so that we solve a number of problems? Or are they completely opposite and you have a choice of one or the other?
Maybe Ms. Otto could.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
How did the two bills relate?
Could you pass both bills?
The non-subsistence use area concept that is in this bill is taken directly out of the governor's bill. They call it F3 area, so F1, F2, and F3 area. It's exactly what they've done in the governor's bill to say that you can't engage in subsistence activities. They call it F3 areas. We call it non-subsistence areas. The criteria set out for defining areas in which I can never remember the language, the dependence upon subsistence is a principal is not a principal characteristic of the economy is taken directly from the governor's bill. The definition of customary trade is modified from the governor's bill. So these issues are dealt with in the governor's bill and dealt with differently. The bills are inconsistent.
Inconsistent. So we have to pass one or the other, not both. You cause more problems by passing both.
Yeah, that's
you
probably
couldn't pass them both.
You couldn't pass them both.
Unamended, you couldn't pass
them.
Unamended, okay.
There are things in the other bill that aren't in.
That's what I'm saying. And the reason why I'm saying, do we need to pass both bills to solve the problem that those in the department foresee for fish and game and for the state?
Well, if you put it that way, I imagine the answer is yes. To solve every problem that they're trying to address in the administration's bill, you need, this bill doesn't do that and isn't intended to.
Okay, that's why I'm asking. If they're complementary, wonderful. If they solve more problems together, or not.
They're inconsistent.
They're inconsistent, definitely.
But they're consistent in that you solve one problem with this bill and they solve other problems. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure with my thinking on line 12 where we consistently introduced a new word here, customary use of hunting and fishing. And here again, when we use the word customary use, are we going to put a time limit on that? Say if a family in the last 5 years, the last 10 years, the last 20 years. The reason why I ask is that there's a number of Native people in my community who have been deprived of this customary use because of the law, and that's what they're griping about. So I'd like to see customary use go back to at least the, maybe when a person was born. I have people 16, 17 years old that grew up in Anchorage on Shep Creek, and they're Clutner. And their customary use, they've been deprived of for 15 or 20 years.
Mr. Chairman, if I may amplify on that question, that was my question as well. The term customary is nowhere defined in here, and I really...
Customary use is in fact defined on the last page of the bill with an amendment in the Resource Committee, number one. Number two, the specific issues that Representative Martin is raising about the length of time is one that the board will need to address in setting criteria. The board could, presumably, if you and your constituents go and explain the problem to them, develop regulations that accommodate those situations. The board could also, using its expertise, decide not to adopt regulations that accommodate that situation. The main idea that pervades this bill is that the boards of fish and game are the people who have expertise in resource management, and those kinds of decisions should be left to them. Specific decisions are left to them in this bill.
But it is those kind of decisions that have deprived my people in my area of use. So I'm saying we as legislators who really represent those people may be able to come and protect them by a time period of some nature, or by even the relationship of the heritage. Heritage to me would be more important than customary use.
Okay, Representative Bloomberg. If I may follow up on that line, my question related to somewhat the same, and I'm going back to a bill I worked on when I was a legislative assistant for Senator Stevens. That was the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and the Native Amendment there talked about traditional Native arts and crafts, and that has spawned considerable litigation, and I don't know that we drafted it as well as we could have. The term customary is, I don't see anywhere defined here, the customary trade, but the custom and the time...
Look at the handwritten portion.
Customary
use. You've got to go back to 1605-258G, which is on page 5.
Yes.
The criteria for determining whether or not somebody qualifies for a customary use permit are those listed in 1, 2, 3, A and B.
You could put the four in there. I understand, and I have read that already. But there's no... Custom to me... And I don't want this necessarily part of the legislative history, it's more of a question.
Customary use is, and I'm sure Mr. Wolf or Dr. Wolf from the Subsistence Division or Mr. Starkey can tell you that customary traditional use has been used for at least 10 years, to my knowledge, in fish and game management areas. There were 8 criteria, there's now 7 set out in regulations that are discussing that. This is not new terminology. The concept of a customary use is new, and that's why it's defined. Mm-hmm. We also tie it, if you look on page 5, line 12 and 13, we talk about customarily taken for subsistence uses. Subsistence uses is also a term that is defined in the statutes in a very detailed fashion.
Maybe at some point that can be clarified, because I'm not an expert, obviously, in this area of the law. And my concern is if you don't describe what you mean by customary or customarily, I don't know.
Other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I have another question, but getting back to that, I still think, you said fish and game, what they do. What they do has been prohibited for urban area people. So it's no use in going back to the customary law as it states here. because those people have been prohibited in Mountain View and in Clutha and all. So somehow or other, I'd like to get a defamation. This ain't a new game with me. I've been fighting for them for a long time.
It is defined.
It is defined to the point where they have been prohibited from doing it. That's defined, and I'm going to change that.
Also, Mr. Chairman.
I just wanted to add something on this point that might help us clarify. Just to what Representative Martin's bringing up. I thought there currently is a system where urban residents can go through the permitting procedure and try to qualify
personal use.
That system exists, and so I was trying to find out how that relates to what we're doing here. I don't know if Lori could try to answer that.
Can I ask you one other question over here? And we're digging it out right now, that the regulations make a specific exemption for people who have not been able to participate because of the existence of a regulation that stopped them from doing so.
Personal use is what I've been using.
And we're pulling it out for you right now so that you can look at that.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
Okay. Well, I think maybe I better understand. But right now, we've got regulations that allow urban residents to try to qualify as subsistence users.
Not for subsistence.
Right.
Personal use.
Personal use or subsistence?
Only personal use. They can't have subsistence.
Well, maybe we can get someone from the department.
Everybody is a subsistence user. That's the whole point.
Right. You can qualify in Anchorage
unless the Supreme Court
and Lori
decides not.
That's what's happened. Because it isn't based on residency. It's based on some pattern.
Mathiasen is not extent. So right now Anchorage residents can qualify as subsistence users, and
I'm trying to relate that to here. Those same people would be able to qualify for whatever we call these things.
Customary
use permit.
Yes.
Right. So that's really what happened here. The people who could qualify for assistance permits could now qualify for customer use permits. Now, I'd assume that if they want to go hunt in a subsistence area versus non-subsistence area, they could still try to qualify for a subsistence permit, but because they're farther away and things, that's probably a less appealing option. Those urban residents aren't precluded from the existing option to apply for subsistence permits just as they do now, but they're going to be in the subsistence areas. They want to do it in the non-subsistence area, they got to get the customary use permit. Am I correct?
That's true. The All Alaskans policy, if it's upheld by the Supreme Court in the Mora case, which is pending now, still prevails. And Representative Martin, to your question, it's 5AAC99010 that says specifically when it's talking about customary use is a long-term consistent pattern of use, excluding interruption by circumstances beyond the user's control, such as regulatory prohibitions. So that deals specifically with the issue that you were raising.
Well, the main thing is that I've been prohibited from using that. And the only way I've been helping people in Mountain View is the personal use permit. They're satisfied when they finally get that, but they really want to be treated equal like others with subsistence. It's not a principle of starving. It's a matter of a principle that they don't feel they gave up any rights.
I feel some comfort with that definition. I hate to draft a statute that refers to a regulation or a key definition because they can always amend the regulation. Mm-hmm. I would feel much more comfortable, and I just as a matter.
This is one of a list of criteria, and
I'm talking about a definition of the term customer. That answers the term customer. That really is. Let me just finish. Two things. Well, just on the matter of drafting, from our point of view, I look at the stuff in the drafting from this committee. To define something here in this amendment and flip it back to page 5 and not have it set out in the definition, as a matter of drafting, I would prefer to have it right there set in the definition. And I would also, Mr. Chairman, like to have the definition of customary put there in the statute so we don't have some bureaucrat somewhere ever changing that.
No, well, we don't
The problem with doing that, we drafted this specifically to avoid using customary uses by itself. That does not appear in here. What we said is on lines 11 and 12, and this was a specific mm-hmm. choice that was recommended by Mr. Udermal to solve the problem you're talking about, is to say customarily taken for subsistence uses, which is a term that's defined in the statute. That's on page 5, lines 12 to 13. Customarily taken for subsistence uses. Subsistence uses is defined.
Can we get what that definition before us? Can I go make copy of it?
Yeah, just in the statute. We don't have 16. It's in the governor's bill being amended, if you have
okay.
the governor's bill around.
Right. I think we're going to groom for Bucks opportunity to talk to Mr. Campbell here. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take about a 10-minute break
okay.
and allow some informal interaction there.
Thank
to help
you.
Us get up to speed on this, because this clearly, these resources issues are pretty new to us as judiciary.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's
okay,
in the governor's
so we're going to reconvene at 20 minutes after 6. Thanks, John. All right, we're just reconvening a consideration of CS for House Bill number 601. Like to call on, we had some discussions with various groups during our intermission here, and like to call on council to review some proposed changes that the chair would like to make.
Okay, if you go to the resources CS, on page, the first one is on page 5, line 19. It says the boards shall adopt regulations providing for the issuance of permits. We would be changing that to the boards may adopt regulations providing for the issuance of permits. It's very clear that the board does not have to allocate resources to people who are holders of this permit, but there are people who feel that the shall here creates an ambiguity that will create problems. And so the First Amendment will be on line 19, changing shall to may.
Line 19?
Yes.
On a motion?
What is the amendment?
Maybe we could read them all, the proposed changes, and do them all at the same time.
The next amendment would be on line 20, and it says, providing for the issuance of permits consistent with the customary use of those fish stocks. Again, that's an area where a number of the people who have reviewed the bill feel there's an ambiguity, so we would be deleting consistent with and replacing that with four.
With what?
For, F-O-R. So it would be providing for the issuance of permits for the customary use of those fish stocks and game populations, etc. The next amendment would be on page 5, and it's the same amendment on lines 26, 27, 29, and 31. And it would be, this is at the request of legal services, and it would be to change permittee to person, which is defined in Title I. And then the final amendment would be to go to the definition section on page 7 and the definition of customary trade. And the amendment would be, and this is conceptual rather than specific, but Mr. Udemal's here and he understands it. And if you have questions about it, you can ask him. It would be to add this to 16.05.258 as a substantive provisional law that requires the boards of fish and the boards to adopt regulations consistent with this language, defining customary trade in more detail, so that we're not just giving them the power to do that, we would be requiring that they do that.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Groomberg.
Just a question to Ms. Otto.
The last one I got a little lost. Okay, what about the provision to make it clear the board has the authority?
Do this?
Yeah.
What George is going to say is the board shall adopt regulations on this.
Okay. All right. That's good. All right. Sorry, Representative Groomberg.
That's okay. To Ms. Otto, looking at the language on page 5, lines 22 and following, I think it's a good idea to have shall there on line 22. However, because that requires them to establish eligibility. However, where it says based on the following criteria, that would seem to be both a mandatory list and an exclusive list.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering whether it would be wise to give them a little more discretion, which you could have in such language as the following, based on criteria which may include the following.
Mr. Chairman,
mm-hmm.
Representative Grunberg, this is a very controversial area. It was subject to a lot of discussion. The criteria were carefully selected. Clearly, the board can define proximity to resource. The board can define availability of alternative resources. The board can define dependence, and the board can define cultural need. They have a great deal of latitude in defining those terms. They can define them narrowly. They can define them broadly. But having an open-ended ability of the board to inject their own criteria is something that was the subject of a lot of discussion and consciously rejected as a drafting choice.
Any other, okay, so we have, I'm going to move those changes. Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, those changes are incorporated in a CS. discussion, Representative Martin?
No, well, I still have a question for discussion. I know a lot of people have been talking it to death, but this is the first chance I get to talk it to death, or at least understand what's going on.
I'm not
going to
give you the opportunity.
Yeah. When you say
you
that the board may have a narrow interpretation or open interpretation, I understand we're giving that to them, but that's where the problem is. What can we as legislators make sure that the board will treat all people equally? Even under these criteria, sound like they may be prohibited to a large number of our citizens.
Well, the board operates under the Constitution that requires all people to be treated equally, and you know,
if you quote that, Article 1, Section 1.
Okay. Any other discussion or questions? Well, is there any other member of the public that wishes to testify? Okay, what's the will of the committee? Mr. Campbell, did you want to address these specific changes? I'll give you the opportunity to address these specific changes if you'd like.
What I would like is no more than 2 minutes. I told them I was going to be able to come back up and testify afterwards. Summarizes the view of the administration. I would skip.
Okay, well, I don't know who told you that, because it wasn't me. I gave you the chance to respond after we went away from you, but you're welcome to come up and give 2 minutes.
Sir, I appreciate the opportunity to come back up. The reason that I wanted to come back up is because during the break, at your request, we worked with you, with your staff and other members of the committee on the bill. Excuse me, not your staff, other assorted members who also seem to have had a lot of to do with drafting the bill. We did not want that to leave any impression whatsoever that we support this bill, we feel there is any need for this bill. We feel that the bill is workable. We feel that, I believe I used the phrase, sort of a Band-Aid on a law run over by a train. If you are interested in fixing the two very specific problems you talked about, that can be done with about one-fifth of this bill. We feel the rest of it is, sir, would never be used by the boards of fish or by the boards of game, that it's because it's patently unworkable. And we simply offered to do that. We believe that every issue that is addressed in a far more thorough and constructive fashion in the council drafted by the Subsistence Advisory Council. And our 1 minute, 10 seconds, and I appreciate your...
Please, go ahead.
No, that's it. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, if there's no other member of the public, I guess we're ready for a motion.
I move that we adopt a committee substitute with amendments.
Is there any objection?
With individual recommendation.
No.
It's just moving to adopt the committee
substitute.
Yes. Any objection? Any objection? Committee substitutes adopted.
I move we pass the bill.
Motion to move the bill with individual recommendations. Any objection? Hearing no objection. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Appreciate everybody being here this time of night.